And welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Tuesday, November 22nd. Coming up this hour, there are some who aren't taking much of a post-election break, like the billionaires who helped Ron Johnson win re-election. They're already planning to spend big to help former right-wing Justice Dan Kelly get back on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. We'll talk about that at the bottom of the hour. Plus, the state budget surplus is even higher than already thought, and we'll attempt to get on board with the World Cup, where there has been a huge upset already in Qatar this morning. If you'd like to reach the show, our number is 715-388-7155. Our email address is radio@upnorthnewswi.com. That, of course, is our website as well. And if you want to follow us on social media, just look for Up North News WI. Don't forget the WI when you're searching for Up North News. We had a chance to speak for a bit yesterday with our friend Dr. Kristen Lyerly about the state's archaic abortion ban written back in 1849 and being challenged in court, but it's a challenge that has taken a long time to this point and is going to take even longer, though that could cut one way or the other depending on how the state Supreme Court race goes. Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call said on Monday that he wants the lawsuit challenging the abortion ban to move quickly through the courts, but it's not clear if it will get to the state Supreme Court eventually in weeks or months. Conservatives currently hold a 4-3 majority on the court, but with Justice Patience Rogensack retiring and an open seat in April, that election could determine if the court continues to be led by a conservative majority or a progressive one by the time that the abortion ban case reaches the state Supreme Court. Now, Attorney General Call, a Democrat, filed the lawsuit back in June, just days after the U.S. Supreme Court overturned the Roe versus Wade landmark 1973 ruling that legalized abortion nationwide. And yet the case has been languishing in Dane County Court for nearly 5 months for a few different reasons. In one case, Call dismissed some of the Republican legislators who were defendants. He asked for them to be dismissed in September. And instead, he is now suing the district attorneys in Dane, Milwaukee, and Sheboygan counties. And the reason for that is that the GOP lawmakers, while the legislature, you know, wrote the ban way back when, they're not the ones who actually enforce it. It would be district attorneys. And so now they're scheduled to file a response to the lawsuit. But then there will be a deadline of November 30th for any motions to dismiss, a February 6th date to complete any briefs on dismissal motions, and on it goes. And so, again, this is a case that's going to be months in the making. And in the meantime, that abortion ban stays in place with the harm that it's been doing to women who have, you know, miscarriages or other health concerns that lead to them having to leave Wisconsin to get the basic care that they need. Call says he wants to move the case forward expeditiously because of the way it's preventing people from receiving needed care, but he also concedes that it takes time to write the briefs on such an unprecedented case, and then you add the holiday season as well. Call is arguing that Wisconsin did adopt a post-Roe v. Wade law in 1985 that did legalize abortions before a fetus can survive outside the womb, and that should supersede the ban. The point of viability outside the womb is debatable. Some doctors say it's around 20 weeks. Others say it's around 28 weeks. Call maintains the 1849 ban is unenforceable because it's so old that it was essentially passed without the consent of the people. So we'll continue to watch how long this delay is taking. And, you know, some would say that delay may actually work in favor of Call and those who want to see the ban struck down because the makeup of the Supreme Court could be changed by then. Others, understandably, would like to see this case move much more quickly because it is something that is causing harm in the present day and that you know, women will be harmed in the future and they can't afford to wait weeks or months before something changes. So for the moment, it looks like it's going to be something that we're going to have to watch for some time to come. If you missed the news put out yesterday by Governor Evers' office, the state's record budget surplus has been forecast to grow even higher. We're going to get to the end of June when the current two-year state fiscal period ends with a surplus of about $6.6 billion. $6.5 billion with a B. Again, Governor Evers has released plans while he was running for re-election about ways that that surplus could go toward tax cuts, tax credits, investment in schools, infrastructure, and what have you. But Republicans have said they will not be meeting and bringing the legislature back into session this year. And so come January, when the legislature does finally have to get back to work and write a budget for the next 2 years, they'll definitely have that extra $6.5 billion to work with. Question becomes whether they and Governor Tony Evers can work together if Republicans will put forward good faith proposals to give them and Evers the win-win that any $6 billion surplus should give anybody in those kinds of positions. We'll have more right after this break. This is Up North News Radio. All right, quarter past seven. This is Up North News Radio on a Tuesday morning, where normally I would talk to producer Aaron Zomers at some point in our Madison studio. I couldn't for a little while. We had some gremlins get in the way, but he appears to be back now, and his hair does not look like he stuck a fork in a socket. So I think he's all the better for the experience. Are you still with us, Aaron?
Well, that's just because my hair is pulled back in a ponytail. but no, I shoot the gremlins away for now. Okay. Well, it should be for good. We just have to buy something and then we'll be all set.
Wouldn't it be funny if it just comes down to an extension cord or something? This is the radio station that Kirk Bangstad knocked off the air by accidentally kicking a button. So we know how fragile these things can be.
At least the button is no longer within range of being kicked in particular. So we fixed that.
Let's hope so. Now, I mentioned yesterday the World Cup is underway, and that while I'm not going to pretend to be the world's biggest soccer fan, it is a big deal, and we are going to follow along with it. And even a soccer doofus like me understands the significance that Lionel Messi and Argentina were upset this morning, our time, by Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia scored one of the biggest World Cup upsets ever by beating Argentina 2-1. Argentina had gotten off to a good start. It was a penalty kick by Messi in the 10th minute. But then in the second half, Saudi Arabia scored two goals in a five-minute span to take that 2-1 lead. The loss by Argentina rivals some other World Cup upsets, like Senegal's 1-0 win over France. And then there was the U.S. beating England 1-0 back in 1950. Argentina had an unbeaten streak of 36 matches. And this will be Messi's fifth and likely last World Cup, a trophy he has yet to hold in his storied career. This is something, Aaron, where I believe you guys might have it on in the background from time to time, or are you like wagering money on these games or something?
Oh, we're not wagering money on it or anything. Definitely watching them. I caught part of the U.S. game yesterday, but I think I mentioned that already.
You and I both were a little underwhelmed. I was much more intrigued or interested in the way the national anthems were handled by the United States and Wales. You had the United States players who were doing, and the fans who were doing, what you have long since come to expect U.S. fans to do: either mumble or mouth the words, not really sing them. Nothing really too boisterous out there. And then it came time for Wales, which, while part of the United Kingdom, is a country with its own national anthem, its own team, And my goodness, I mean, the players were shouting the lyrics. All the red-clad Wales fans were shouting the lyrics. By the end of it, I wanted to know the words and wanted to sing along. There was a lot of national pride put on display there. And a lot of folks from Wales had a great time afterward, after, you know, bringing the Americans to a draw, 1-1. The Americans had scored first, but then Wales was awarded a penalty kick and scored on that. And, you know, that's how it ended. Again, many games to go, even in this first round. But, you know, in a World Cup like this, teams like Argentina and the U.S., you know, these are kind of gimmies for them. And to not get those gimmies puts a little bit more pressure on future games. Aaron, that's the end of my knowledge about the World Cup.
I mean, I don't really have anything more to give at this point. However, I will say that the disparity in perceived, what's the word? Why can't I think of it? Patriotism of the U.S. fans, I guess, makes some sense, especially given the history of our national anthem and how some people would prefer pretty strongly to change it.
You know, that is an interesting topic that comes up every few years or so. I recall when Lee Greenwood first came out with God Bless the USA, there was a serious move to replace the Star Spangled Banner with that song as a national anthem. And I'm sure other people have brought up particular options as well. The Star Spangled Banner, not the easiest song to sing.
Yeah, definitely not.
Lyrics that aren't really, you know, in touch with the times. We were at war with Great Britain at the time. They're now one of our best allies. So yeah, I'm not going to fault people for, you know, having difficulty singing it, but I'm definitely going to admire anybody who can belt out their national anthem so unabashedly patriotic as the folks from Wales did. Now, the World Cup is caught up in, you know, a different kind of discussion away from the pitch, as they call it. And it has all to do with the fact that it is being played in Qatar, which is this tiny nation rich with oil. It's got a U.S. military base on there. And it has a human rights record that is downright atrocious. We talked yesterday about how the bidding, excuse me, for this particular World Cup, how the bidding was corrupt, where there was bribery involved, most definitely. There's a FIFA corruption case, or multiple cases, that have been in the news since 2014. And there still hasn't been adequate justice for, you know, the corruption and the bribery and the, you know, the rigging behind the scenes at that. But bringing it back to the host, because of its record, because of its culture, if you will, there are big pushes to not have outward signs that embrace inclusion and diversity. And that even includes World Cup players from around the world. And as a result, America's Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, criticized a decision by FIFA to threaten players at the World Cup with yellow cards if they were to wear armbands in support of inclusion and diversity. Blinken said that it's always concerning when we see any restrictions on freedom of expression. He said no one should be forced to choose between supporting those values and playing for their team. Just hours before the first players with armbands in support of the One Love campaign were to take the field, soccer's governing body warned that they would immediately be shown yellow cards, two of which lead to a player being kicked out of that game and also the next. So on Monday, no players wore the One Love armbands, though seven European teams had said they had planned to wear them back before the tournament began. England's Harry Kane wore a FIFA-approved armband that said no discrimination rather than one love, which was offered as a compromise in a match with Iran. FIFA has been trying to counter the Europeans diversity campaign with its own armbands featuring some more generic slogans backed by some of the UN agencies. The Associated Press article here has more about Blinken's visit to Qatar and, you know, the oil-rich nation, the way it's been treating migrant laborers, the way it has criminalized gay and lesbian sex. And, you know, like I said, the 8,000 American troops that are there, it was a key base during the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan. And, of course, Qatar and others are concerned about Iran. Iran probably has enough uranium enriched up to 60%, which is a short step away from weapons grade levels. And while Tehran insists the program is peaceful, there's reason to doubt that. And its program has expanded mightily since a guy named Donald Trump killed the nuclear deal between Iran and much of the world in 2015. Iran is currently dealing with its own months-long protests after the September 16th death in custody of a 22-year-old woman who had been arrested by the country's morality police. Demonstrators led to a crackdown that has killed at least 400 people in Iran. And, you know, Iranian players were seen not singing their national anthem at all at the beginning of the World Cup in their own form of protest against what is happening there. So, I mean, all in all, you have a troubled, fragile part of the world with oppressive regimes, with a corrupt sports body awarding a global tournament to play in new stadiums built in a desert where it gets to be 140 degrees in the summer. So they've moved the traditionally summer World Cup to, you know, the late fall, and are trying to put on, you know, their best possible face, though it's not working nearly to the extent that, you know, they're not fooling people, put it that way. While Fox Sports, again, you know, being part of the Fox network, is playing up all of the pageantry and the shiny colors and what have you, the BBC, Telemundo, other networks have done a much more appropriate job of setting the scene of you know, what is really going on in those countries, and that, you know, we're going to cover the matches, but we're not going to, you know, whitewash or paste over, you know, the shortcomings in these countries. So there's way more politics behind the scenes than people would like. Many people would just like to see the games played with the upsets, with, you know, the draws, with the celebrations, and that would be great. And we'll try to keep that in mind going forward. But as they say, attention must be paid to the record of the host here. Saw a lot of comments online, people saying, well, it's not like the U.S. is innocent. It's not like the Europeans have a clean record. Yeah, we know. That's the whole point, is trying to be better and not just to say, well, you know, because we're not always perfect, we shouldn't expect others to be at least closer to our level rather than tolerating them being even less perfect. Yeah, there's going to be these discussions along with the games, but hopefully we can play the games as well, Aaron.
It's just like that old dumb saying, like, just because your friends jumped off a bridge doesn't mean you should too. Like, just because somebody else is being worse doesn't give you, like, it doesn't mean that there's an excuse to not try and do better yourself.
Yeah, exactly. And again, these are human rights standards that while we may not have, you know, lived up to our own best values in the past, it's something we should always try to do, not just for ourselves, but, you know, for our neighbors and others around the world, to basically, you know, lift standards and, you know, not be oppressive. And for those who say, well, this is just wokeism run amok, apparently you have not listened to the show then, if that's what you're saying, because what's one of the foundational principles of this show? Woke is just shorthand for don't be a jerk. Don't be a prejudiced, discriminatory jerk. And I use a stronger word than jerk in real life, but you get where I'm going with this. Coming up next, we're going to talk about the state Supreme Court race and how much money is going to be poured into it and why you should know that going in. Our discussion with Sachin Chetta coming up next. This is Up North News Radio.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
All right, we will get set here on the Wisconsin Supreme Court race to tell you that on Monday, I spoke with Sachin Chetta, a senior advisor to Milwaukee Judge Janet Protasiewicz, a progressive candidate for state Supreme Court, about what we're going to endure for the next big election campaign here in the state. Protasiewicz is joined by Dane County Judge Everett Mitchell as likely candidates to counter right-wing former Justice Dan Kelly in the race to fill an upcoming vacancy being created by the retirement of conservative Justice Pat Rogensack. Is this the most important state Supreme Court race ever? Yes. Have we said it in the past? Yes. And it's still true anyway. Will you be tired of all the ads? Yes. But that makes this race no less important, as I discussed with Sachin. As much as people would love a little bit of a break after the election, break time's kind of over because there is going to be this very big state Supreme Court race. And for all the talk we made about the E-lines being involved in Ron Johnson's race, you and others want to make sure people know they're not taking a break. They're jumping right into the state Supreme Court race.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, you know, you have Dickie Eline and Diane Hendricks, who together and along with a couple other friends spent upwards of $30 million on what were some of the most racist, vile ads against Mandela Barnes and lies about freedom told in favor of Ron Johnson. When you have such a close race, you have $30 million of spending. Obviously, it's clear that made the difference. Let me also just point out that, you know, that sounds like a lot of money, but Ron Johnson pushed through a tax cut that in 1 year alone saved them $200 million. So it was a 15% investment in terms of the money that they made in order to keep those riches flowing into their coffers on the backs of middle-class Wisconsinites like you and me. So those are the folks. They've now pledged to spend millions of dollars on behalf of Dan Kelly, who was defeated for the Supreme Court in 2020 by Jill Karofsky. And I was also senior advisor to that campaign and oversaw it. And I just want to say that, you know, this is it. This is all hands on deck. Our state government is at risk. If we don't win the Supreme Court race in April, then we're not going to be able to bring successful cases on the constitutionality of voter initiative, the right for women to control their own bodies, fair maps, all of those things that Wisconsinites care about by wide margins are on the ballot in April.
What did people learn in 2020 about then Justice Kelly in his race against Jill Karofsky? What did voters learn about this Scott Walker appointee that made them want to go in a different direction and that voters will probably be reminded about again between now and April?
Yeah, I mean, look, Dan Kelly lost by double digits in the spring of 2020 in that April general election. We held that election in the middle of a pandemic. If you recall, Milwaukee had to, you know, take 200 polling sites and distill it down to just 5 polling sites on election day. We were right in the heat of the first few weeks of the pandemic. Everything had been shut down. But people knew that Dan Kelly, I think they knew two things about him. One, he is an extremist Christian nationalist. He is someone who is to the far right of the Republican Party with extreme views, educated at Regent University, coming from the Federalist Society, definitely out of the mainstream. And the second thing is they found out that he was corrupt, that he was willing to kind of, you know, help the people who he'd worked for in private practice. There was a lot of double dealing in terms of, you know, people were bringing cases that were his friends and allies. And what it came down to is that he couldn't be trusted to uphold our constitutional freedoms, to uphold Wisconsin values. And that's what I think Janet is best placed to do as a member of the Supreme Court.
It certainly sounds like Dan Kelly is, to borrow a line from Tim Michaels, mirrors the values of the Elines and Diane Hendricks.
Yeah, I mean, look, these are not mainstream Republicans. These are far, far right-wing extremists who have radical, radical views about a family. They have radical views about government. They have radical views about taxes. They really don't just believe in low taxes for everybody. They believe in higher taxes for lower and middle income people and take that money and trickle it up, or actually like a fire hose, jet that money up to the richest so that there'll be a tiny elite of this country who control most of our resources. These radical views have been rejected time and again at the ballot box. It's disconnected from our constitutional order, but that's the extremism that Dan Kelly represents.
I would think that coming off of Ron Johnson's win, however narrow it might be in November, that we probably won't see the Elines and Diane Hendricks and other supporters of Dan Kelly stray far from the campaign tactics that worked, especially in terms of a message about crime. What is it about that message on crime that is not only liable to be reproduced in this race, but that more voters should be aware of before they cast a ballot?
Well, look, it wasn't just that they were talking about crimes, that they were telling vile racist lies about Mandela Barnes and misrepresenting his own record, and doing it in a way that was designed to appeal to the basest of right-wing supporters. And the reality is that we live in a state that is overwhelmingly white, and that there is an audience for that type of racism. You know, this is the same state where the John Birch Society was founded, and where the former president of the Ku Klux Klan, or the Grand Poobah of the Ku Klux Klan, was based. And so we have to be conscious of those realities. I think what's different, though, in the spring is that if they're doing that pointed at Janet Protasiewicz, Janet spent more than 25 years as a district attorney. She's been a tough but fair judge. She's absolutely concerned about the safety of her family, just like you're concerned, Pat, about the safety of yours, and I'm concerned about the safety of mine. And, you know, we're going to be very, very aggressive in pointing out how his extremism, for example, on guns actually makes us less safe. This is a guy who, in the days after the mass shooting at Miller Brewing, held a fundraiser in which he was holding an AR-15. They were, I think, naming the levels of the fundraiser off of after various guns. He has extreme, extreme views. And good people in Wisconsin who are hunters, who want to carry a firearm for personal protection, that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about massive waves of guns coming into our state, getting into the hands of the people who shouldn't have them, the folks who are mentally deranged, criminals. And that flow of guns that has increased gun crime in Wisconsin can be directly traced back to the extreme views that Dan Kelly and his allies have on guns.
All right, let's try to end on a positive note, asking that if more folks see through the Elines and Hendricks and Kelly and things like that, and make a change on the state Supreme Court and give it a 4-3 progressive majority, how would things visibly, noticeably improve that the voters would be able to tell that a change had been made on the state Supreme Court?
Well, I think there's two things. So first of all, I wouldn't call it a progressive majority, right? Because even if you look at Justice Rebecca Dowd and Justice Jill Karofsky, they don't always agree with each other. And those are both campaigns that I've been involved with. But what you get with those two justices, with Justice Ann Walsh Bradley, what you get with the Justice Janet Protasiewicz is a fair reading of the Constitution, open-mindedness to the arguments. Their finger is not on the button to try to get to an end. With Dan Kelly and Rebecca Bradley, with Annette Ziegler, with Pat Rogenczyk, what you've seen is a partisan Republican Supreme Court majority that bends things in the favor of Robin Voss and Devin LeMahieu, that bends things in the favor of Scott Walker, and that really has torn apart the fairness and openness and lack of corruption that we used to have and we used to be known for as a state. So I think the first thing that you'd see on the state Supreme Court is parties being able to put evidence forward, the order to be restored, and really we'll be counting on the Constitution and the law. The second thing, Pat, I'd say is that you'll stop seeing the process short-circuited for the benefit of right-wing extremist special interests. What they've done when they've lost in the lower courts is they just rip those cases out of the lower courts, send them to their partisan majority on the state Supreme Court, and it's the worst judicial activism you've ever seen. And I think that the end of that would be the most profound thing that would give power back to the people, that would restore our constitutional order, would restore our constitutional freedoms, and make Wisconsin the kind of state where corruption is defeated instead of holding sway. That's what we're looking for on the state Supreme Court.
That was our conversation with Sachin Chetta, a senior advisor to Judge Janet Protasiewicz, one of the candidates for Wisconsin Supreme Court, talking about the money, the big, big money that's about to come in from Dick and Liz Eline, from Diane Hendricks, from right-wing groups all over the place are going to pour into Wisconsin any time now for the primary election in February, the general election in April, all of it to help out Dan Kelly, who at the time that he was appointed to the state Supreme Court in 2016, was the Milwaukee chapter president of the right-wing Federalist Society. He was appointed by Scott Walker. He then ran for a full term on his own in 2020 and was defeated by Jill Karofsky. When Scott Walker appointed Kelly to the state Supreme Court in 2016, he said at the time that Kelly has the kind of intellectual impact that Justice Antonin Scalia had on the U.S. Supreme Court. And that comparison to Scalia is not unwarranted in ways that you can figure for yourself, given Scalia's record. And you'll notice the similarity as well in one particular case in 2020, when PolitiFact had to call out Dan Kelly for a false assertion, claiming that Jill Karofsky wants to, quote, disarm law-abiding citizens, when what she said was nothing of the sort. But, you know, again, leave it to Kelly and to other, you know, mass shooter apologists to try to claim that, you know, the government is coming for your guns and wants to take guns away. After a spate of school shootings, Karofsky said that it's, quote, up to the policymakers to decide what the law should be, and judges like me are here to apply and interpret the law, but I know action is needed. We can respect constitutional rights and at the same time take steps to make every family safer. It's way past time for lawmakers to step up to the plate. Nowhere in there does it say that law-abiding citizens are going to be disarmed. But that's the kind of tactic that we got from Dan Kelly and conservatives in 2020. And it's what we're probably going to see as well in this next race, where on his website, he is already talking about his experience protecting the smooth functioning of a free market, defending speech on campus, and representing religious organizations' rights to free speech. Again, for, I think, a particular point of view. In terms of the couple of progressive candidates that are out there so far, Judge Janet Protasiewicz is, and by the way, I'm one of the few people that can spell Protasiewicz. It's Protasiewicz. We fellow folks of Polish descent have to stick together. Oh, Aaron's running to his defense here.
I almost would have gotten that. I would have done Proto and then gotten the rest of it right.
you would see, when I spelled it wrong, it was because that S in the middle I changed into a C, but there's only one C in Protasiewicz right before the Z, you know, as one does.
Yeah,
definitely. I'm very lucky that my family names, you know, include things like Kreitlow and, you know, Pingle and Snaza, and not, you know, not the alphabet soup that so many other folks of my people come from. Anyway, on their website, it mentions that their website's called janetforjustice.com that talks about her community involvement. And then there's also Judge Everett Mitchell from Dane County, and his website is judgeeverettmitchell.com. Everett is E-V-E-R-E-T-T. And again, he has a page that talks about his experience in the community and what he's doing on the bench in Dane County, the things that he has done for the juvenile division in Dane County, including overseeing the high-risk drug court program. And so we'll see those two and Dan Kelly and perhaps others yet get involved in the race for a February primary, and then whatever the top two candidates are, will then face off in the April general election for that open seat on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. This day in history and music coming up after this. This is Up North News Radio. All right, this day in music history, 1968, the Beatles released what became known as the White Album, which, of course, there includes Obladi Oblada, Back in the USSR, and Blackbird. The Beatles show up three different times on our musical calendar for November 22nd. It was on this day in 2010 that after just 1 week on the iTunes store, the Beatles had sold over 450,000 albums and over 2 million individual songs. And in a tragic coincidence, it was on November 22nd, 1963, that the Beatles released their second studio album with the Beatles, which included the song All My Loving. But of course, that was also the day that President Kennedy was murdered. And Billy Joel used to talk in concert, I guess, a great deal about seeing the Beatles for the first time on the Ed Sullivan Show. And the first time that he saw them was a February 1964 appearance. So, you know, about 3 months after the president of the United States had been shot dead, and the catharsis that he felt by watching the Beatles and knowing right then and there that he wanted to be a musician, and so many others did as well, in part because of that album that was released November 22nd, 1963. Let's see. We also have, if you've seen the movie, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? You're familiar with the song Man of Constant Sorrow. You've probably never heard it. I had never heard the Bob Dylan version until I was putting this together. But Bob Dylan recorded Man of Constant Sorrow and six other songs for his debut album on November 22nd, 1961.
But there's one promise, darling. I'll see you on God's golden shore.
So there, a little bit different than what I'm used to from the movie soundtrack. On this day in 1975, Casey and the Sunshine Band hit number one on the U.S. singles chart with That's the Way I Like It, held the number one spot for 2 weeks. While that plays, we'll tell you that birthdays today include Monty Python's Terry Gilliam, who is 82 years old today. Billie Jean King is 79. Stevie Van Zandt is 72. Jamie Lee Curtis is 64. And actor Mark Ruffalo, born on this day in 1967, so 55 years old today. Let's see. Also here, we're now moving out of my territory, Aaron. Pearl Jam's third studio album was released on this day in 1994. What's the name of that album?
Vitalogy. After
gotcha.
Their okay. second album, Verses.
Okay, gotcha. It says here that it was actually released on vinyl before the CD, making it the first vinyl record on U.S. album charts since the CD, you know, had come on the scene. And then once it was released on CD, it became the second fastest-selling CD in history, only falling behind that previous album of Verses. So that's this day in history, and something that Aaron and I often enjoy bringing to you because, you know, we learn stuff too. There's a lot, you know, when I look at this day in history, I'm thankful that I've got somebody like you to help keep things a little bit more modern, because a lot of the websites out there, you know, there's a lot of Elvis Presley did this, Elvis Presley did that, the Beatles did this, the Beatles did that. Not that it's not historic, but, you know, for every one of those, we need to be reminded that music history is still being made to this day. We just, you know, we don't appreciate it. Well, maybe you and your young fellows do more than I do.
I mean, I don't know if I'd call Pearl Jam the most modern since 1994, but at least more modern than Elvis and the Beatles.
Yes, true. Okay.
By a little bit.
Although you were just telling me yourself, you know, young man that you are, you and your young friends would play Beatles tunes.
Yeah, back when I was in like 7th or 8th grade, I think both some of my friends and I would get together and play Beatles songs and like switch instruments. So we'd play All My Loving, which we heard earlier. That one, all the parts are fun and not that hard. So it'd be like my friend Jonathan's playing bass, my friend Noah is playing guitar, and I'm playing drums, and then just circle around. And that was a lot of fun.
Oh, nice. See, as somebody who was never musically inclined, that's always nice to hear and reminds me of what I missed out on. New at our website, upnorthnewswi.com, from Christina Laurie, you have the best moments in Wisconsin politics in 2022. I know what you're thinking. Were there any best moments in Wisconsin politics? And, you know, yes, there was. There was actually some working towards some bipartisanship. There was a handful of election results that gave people a little bit of hope or encouragement. There was even something we've talked about here on the show, a sign out of Dunn County that maybe there is a path forward toward bipartisan consensus on finally fixing our very broken health insurance system. And in fact, that is our question of the week. If you go to Up North News WI on Facebook and scroll down a bit, you will see our question of the day graphic. And it's not our words. It's actually the wording of the Dunn County referendum that says, should Congress and the president enact a national nonprofit health insurance program that covers medical costs for all Americans? And then I split the yes and no up just because I wanted to know what people think. You know, either no, you think the current system, you know, doesn't need changing, it's fine as is, or yes, as a public option, which we could have had back with the Affordable Care Act, but Joe Lieberman insisted it be taken out. So we would have a public option that that health plan would form. Or do you want to see it just completely nationalized and that that national health insurance plan would take the place of the corporate-driven health insurance industry and the, shall we say, many rejections for healthcare coverage that it has brought? So we would love to get your comments on that, and we'll pass those along maybe tomorrow and then again next Monday as we wrap up the previous week. And again, that's over at Up North News WI. Don't forget that on Facebook if you're going to be searching for us there. Let's see, tomorrow on the program, we are going to be talking to folks from the Wisconsin Policy Forum. That's a nonpartisan think tank that has put forward a couple of dozen studies now that examine state spending, the state budget in one way or another. We're going to talk about this record budget surplus and what they call the golden opportunity that it provides for the legislature and the governor to, you know, that everybody gets something out of it that is beneficial to the state, and especially those local governments that have been so cash strapped because of limits by the legislature. Well, maybe now with a stronger economy and a surplus, maybe there's a path forward, and the Wisconsin Policy Forum will help us with that. All right. Well, again, if you want to follow me on social media, on Facebook, it's Pat Kreitlow Up North. And on Twitter, it's Pat Kreitlow. And I'm still putting together my Mastodon profile in case you go navigating over there. And of course, Up North News WI on social media sites otherwise. All right, go have fun, work hard, play hard, enjoy the day, and we'll see you again come Wednesday.